Welcome to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks P.I. first of the moment when he's on a walk and he looks at his owner while he's relieving himself. P.I. thank you for that pity laugh. I am taping this from sunny South Beach, Miami on my new space gray laptop where the buzz for the hometown team is palpable. So I am joined by the Dolphins reporter today. As soon as I said Dolphins, I started screwing up.
Hey, everybody's laughing.
It's a contagion.
I mean, you know, I don't think you're out of the norm. I'm going to try to keep the water bottles away from your laptop so you don't pull
appreciate
a Dolphin
that.
Type performance.
That's Cam Wolf, who we were talking about before the show. His name is Cameron, and I was asking him if he prefers to go by Cam or Cameron, and he was kind of dodgy about it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm cool with whatever you go for. I'm not like the what was the guy who was really particular about his name
on my show?
No, the quarterback.
Mitch Trubisky is Mitchell.
Yeah. No, my mom's not gonna have a preference either way about which way you should say my name, so I think I could go with Cam.
I was thinking about the Mitch Mitchell thing when a couple weeks ago, there was an episode of Succession. I don't know if you watched that, but there's a character named Greg, and he didn't show up the entire episode. At the end, he was like, I go by Gregory now. And I was thinking about Mitch Trubisky showing up and saying, I go by Mitchell now, which would be a hard move now. I feel like you have to be playing well to make name demands.
Yeah, and I don't think he can. He's not playing that well.
Yeah, no, that's unfair. Wow. Guns blazing from the Dolphins reporter.
I'm just being honest.
Throwing flames. I'm Mina, M-I-N-A, and my whole life my name's been mispronounced and misspelled, and I just took it because I'm a beta. We'd play soccer, and the ref would have to say their names, and they'd always be like, Mina or Mina, and I'm like, yeah, sure.
That's me.
Whatever. You know, it's like not worth it. You're wearing a Mariners jersey, pandering to me.
Yeah, shout out to Ken Griffey Jr. You know,
was he your favorite as a kid?
Him and Swinging Sammy Sosa, funny enough, were my two
really?
favorite.
Pretty dissimilar.
Very similar. Dissimilar. And I guess at this point, I probably am going to just say King Griffey Jr. is my favorite player.
I think that's the safer pick these days. King Griffey Jr. is like very unambiguously beloved, I feel like. He's like a very safe athlete to say is your favorite.
He is. Nobody's going to argue with him. That's why he like almost unanimously made it into the Hall of Fame.
Except for Bomani. He's always saying he was over.
Bomani doesn't like King Griffey
Jr.? It's like
Jr.?
A whole thing. You know, Bomani's got like a few athletes he'll like kind of, yeah. I never get into it with him.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't want to go.
I need reasons, like legitimate reasons why you don't like.
Right. It's not like Kirk Cousins. You know,
yeah.
Like the other one. I was about to say, speaking of Cousins, but we're not talking about the Vikings this week. We're going to talk about the Dolphins because obviously you know the team better than anyone. I am fascinated by them. I think there's beyond just laughing and saying tank, there's so many interesting facets to this story, the future of the team. I actually want to talk to you about what it's actually like to cover the team, which
right.
I think is so interesting. And we're going to talk a little bit about what you referred to before the show as the Mina Bowl, briefly. that, of course, is Rams Seahawks. I just don't want to get dragged by Russell.
I got to pick a side.
I'm a Seahawks fan. But before we do, there's a couple games I want to talk about in depth this week that I find pretty interesting. I want to talk about the Panthers, who are back in the thick of it. It surprised me and beat Houston. I want to talk about Minshew Mania. But first, I want to talk to you about Packers Cowboys.
Okay.
Which is probably the game. I mean, I guess Browns-Niners, who knew, right? The Niners, we'll see how that.
Jimmy
I know,
G.
Yeah, I know. I haven't talked about the Niners on this pod. I was planning to last week, but then they were on the bye. I'm going to talk about them next week, Niners fans. So don't worry. I wanted to take time and actually.
Are they the only undefeated
them. Yes,
team
they are.
Left in the NFC?
In the NFC, yeah. Yes. So it's crazy. I actually like to watch teams play before I talk about them. So that's coming from a place of ignorance. I just haven't had time with them yet.
Yeah, I haven't watched a lot of Niners football either. I don't think they've played anybody yet, have they?
Anyone good.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. Well, I mean, who knows what the Bucs are, right? I mean,
yeah.
But we'll talk about that. I mean, I think this game will be an interesting test for them with what we saw from Cleveland. But Packers-Cowboys, I would say, are firmly entrenched as in the top tier. The funny thing about the NFC is, like, as you alluded to, like, the AFC, you've got, I think, a very, very clear upper class with Kansas City and New England.
Yes, and then there's the rest.
And then, yeah, there's, like, a few okay teams, you know, like the Browns, the Ravens, the Bills held their own.
Right.
The NFC is the lot. Like, it's just anyone's game at this point.
Yeah, there's probably, like, seven or eight teams that you could say legitimately have a chance to make it to the Super Bowl in NFC.
Totally.
And the AFC is literally Chiefs.
Right.
Patriots. Like, I'd be shocked if one of those teams were in the Super Bowl.
So I think the Packers and Cowboys are unambiguously in that 7 or 8 team tier, both coming off of losses this week. Both got brought back down to earth a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I think the Packers lost to an Eagles team that finally looked like the Eagles team I thought they would be. There's still some injuries there, and I find them interesting as well, and I look forward to talking about them soon. But the Cowboys also, you know, again, came down to earth a little bit, but yeah. I still think they're a very, very good team.
See, I have a little bit of different view, and I'll cause a little bit of stir on social media when I said it this week, but I think the Cowboys are pretenders.
Pretenders?
I think they're pretenders.
Okay, let's start there then. I was going to start with the Packers, especially because, for those who don't know, Cam used to cover the Titans, so he knows Matt LaFleur well and kind of his tendencies, and I find that really interesting. But the Cowboys are interesting too, because in this loss, I think going into this game, Kellen Moore honestly was like the wonder boy of the NFL after 3 weeks. People were anointing him the next
McVay.
I know, right? Speaking of, the McVabies are not often.
No,
LaFleur is the exception. So this was the Kellen Moore come down, you will. And it wasn't just that they lost. It was the way they lost, because they looked like, from an offensive perspective, the defense was excellent. We can talk about them.
Right.
They looked like the 2018 Cowboys to me.
They did. Like, Zeke had nothing going.
It
seemed like they loaded the box. The whole scouting report, I think, against the Cowboys for years has been, you stop Zeke, you stop the offense. And, you know, Dak has played extremely well, I guess, you know, over the first 2 or 3 games of the season. And we're starting to rewrite the narrative about Dak and saying he deserves to get paid. But the offense last game looked exactly like you mentioned.
Yeah.
Stop Zeke and you stop the Cowboys. And if you do that, then what do the Cowboys have?
Right, exactly. And I think what was so frustrating for me, I mean, one, not just that Kellen Moore seemed to go away from some of the creativity, a lot less play action, some of the stuff he'd been very successful at, but you're right, it felt like they were running Zeke over and over, even though it wasn't working. And by the way, it wasn't just because he was facing stacked boxes. I did pull the numbers. So when he did face 8-man boxes this game, he ran for 2 yards.
Yeah.
So not great. But it wasn't even – the Saints didn't even have to stack it that many times,
right,
because their run defense is so good. And it was like they forgot – the Saints' run defense was excellent last year, too.
Yeah.
Their defensive line is incredible.
I think people still have the misnomer that the Saints have this terrible defense.
Right.
They've had it for years, and it's Drew Brees carrying this team. I would argue that the Saints' defense is better than their offense.
They are right now.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be their calling card even when Drew Brees comes back. You play extremely well, stopping the run. You force teams to pass on you. Marshawn Lattimore starting to have a bounce back year.
He locked down
Amari Cooper.
Amari in this game, although he looked – yeah, he did, yeah.
Yeah, he played well against Amari. And, yeah, I think that, you know, you got Teddy Bridgewater, Mr. U-Haul. I don't know if you know Teddy Bridgewater's Mr. U-Haul here.
Why is he called Mr. U-Haul?
He's from Liberty City. He pulls up to his hood and has a U-Haul truck full of goods, where he gives out bicycles, gives out school supplies to his kids.
Why is he the most perfect person?
He's great.
Have you ever met anyone who doesn't like Teddy Bridgewater?
No. No.
He's universally adored.
He had a clip after the press conference this week where they were talking about his stats, and he was like, I had zero stats over the last couple of years. I'm winning in life. And it seemed like if anybody else says it, you might just think, oh, that's kind of a cliche.
Yeah.
Teddy, genuine, real dude, and he deserves everything that he's
getting. I think a lot of it is because of his name, though. It's Teddy.
Teddy.
I mean, yes, he seems like a genuinely good human being and, you know, amazing comeback story, but that his name is Teddy. And he has, like, that cute face, you know.
Yeah. So if he was Ted or Theodore, he wouldn't have.
Well, imagine an alternate universe where Teddy Bridgewater is named Dan. Mm. Not as cute, not as charming, not as lovable.
Nah.
It seems pretty obvious to me. But back to the Saints defense versus the Cowboys offense, I think you're right. The Saints defense is incredibly underrated, in particular that line. They added Malcolm Brown from New England. I mean, the pass rush wasn't incredible in this game, but they didn't really need to be, because what they were doing was they were actually just dropping a ton of guys back and kind of daring Dak to throw. And when you lock down Amari, I think what you saw in this game was a concern I think I had about the Cowboys coming into the season, which wasn't the case in the first few games, which is they don't have a ton of depth behind Amari Cooper the wide receiver position.
Who are you afraid of?
No one.
I guess outside of Amari Cooper. So like
Darwin?
even like Jason Witten with this, he's running a 5'40".
That fumble.
yeah.
There was that moment where he was like, you could, hear his mind being like, I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Like, will y'all take me back on Monday Night Football?
Yeah, like, I don't want to. He was bending over. It was like, you know, when you get older and you're like, bend over and you're like, oh, this doesn't feel the way it used to.
Yeah.
You could see, like, him age in real time.
He made a decision that this is his last year at that moment.
Yeah. No. Didn't look great.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, I think you're absolutely right with that Cowboys offense. You've got to figure out, like, if I'm a defensive coordinator, I say priority one to stop Zeke, priority two, stop Amari. And then once you do that, what can Dallas do on one-on-one coverage that you can be afraid of them? And that's what I think the Saints did. They challenged them one-on-one, playing a lot of man. And, you know, Marcus Davenport and Trey Hendrickson did a really good job up front against that Cowboys offensive line.
They
and
were winning
they were.
Against that offensive
they
line.
They were. And we kind of anoint the Cowboys as sort of this best offensive line in the league. And they have a lot of success there. But I think this year they've shown a little bit of holes
in softness.
That. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that, I think, brings us to the real concern here, which is Tyron Smith. Now, he's week to week. So he went out with this game. It was a high ankle sprain, I believe.
Yes, I think
he's week to week, which has to be a massive relief for Cowboys fans. Because when we would go back and have these debates over who's more important, Dak or Zeke, every time when you actually looked at the statistics, it was Tyron Smith, whose absence was, you know, killing everyone. So I think without him, and then bring us to this game against a Packers pass rush that has been pretty good, even though Cameron Fleming is backup is, you know, solid and has experience, that's got to be an issue going into this game.
Yeah, I think if the Packers are really trying to attack this team, I'd want to see them get blitz happy and really test Dak and see how he can handle the pressure. Because, you know, I think that when Dak is at his worst, it's when the game and the onus is on him. And I think even throughout the years, that's still been the calling card. Like, I was watching him in person against Miami, and for the better part of that half, I was like, who is this quarterback?
Yeah.
Like, he was throwing a lot of, like, terrible passes up in the air. And it was just like, you know, the Dolphins have no pass rusher. Like, zero. Like, negative pass rushers. And he still was finding ways to get into trouble. And I'm like, what's going to happen when he plays real defenses? What's going to happen if adversity strikes? So that's why I believe the Cowboys are pretenders, because I don't trust Dak to get it done when things are taken around away from him.
So interesting to cover the Dolphins, because when you watch quarterbacks, you're seeing them through such a different lens. Like, right, you're like, oh, you're not succeeding against us.
Yes.
And then obviously he turned it around later. We'll talk about that more. Yeah, I mean, I think this is a tough matchup for them with Smith out. I think Kellen Moore, I do think he will get back to some of the stuff he was succeeding with. And this was kind of one of those games where, you know, perhaps he kind of underestimated what the Saints run defense brought to the table and the way they were going to play him, you know, with more guys in coverage. But the Packers, I think, defense is probably capable of executing a similar plan. I don't think their run defense is as good as New Orleans. I think they have a better secondary, but the Packers' run defense just got shredded by Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So, you know, potentially you actually could see Zeke continue to get the ball.
I actually have been really impressed with the Packers. Like, even through the loss against Philadelphia, I'm really high on Philadelphia. And I think that a lot of the reasons that they're kind of looking like they are is because of injuries and because of just – They seem to have a slow start to years seemingly every year. So I'm not worried about them, and I'm not worried about the Packers losing to them. But I didn't think the Packers were going to be able to have this much success early on defense.
No,
and
yeah.
I thought they would look how they did offensively. Matt LaFleur, new scheme. You know, they haven't really got to the level. But defensively, they have looked really stout. And maybe it's those pass rushers they went and bought in free agency this year.
The Smiths.
The Smiths.
They're great.
Yeah, they are. And I think a lot of people didn't really know who they were nationally. So you see their names, you're like, why are these guys getting money?
Yeah.
Why is Preston Smith getting 8 or 9? But like, they have been really good.
They've been excellent. I think what Philadelphia did was kind of identify the weakness in the Packers defense, which is up the middle.
Yeah.
Kenny Clark, who's normally very good, had a real bad game.
Yeah.
And then behind him, Blake Martinez, the inside linebackers, that's where they're soft, because you're right. The Smiths have been really good. Mm-hmm. And I think Peterson, it's funny, I complained about him running it on early downs as I do, but the run game was working for them first of all, their line was mauling.
Oh, man. Brandon Brooks.
Yes, good Lord.
The dude, I think, came off of, what is it, Achilles or knee injury?
Yes, he was amazing.
He came back week one, and he looks like the best guard in football.
Incredible. So that Philadelphia offensive line is part of the reason I like them, and they look so much better in this game, especially run blocking. The other thing, Cam, about the Packers defense, which I really liked, in the first few games, I talked about, I want to say a couple of weeks ago, how Mike Pettine was doing some really smart stuff. He had them almost exclusively in sub packages.
Right.
Philadelphia comes out heavy.
Yeah.
They come out and they do what they did successfully last year, which is a lot of 12 with Ertz and Goddard. And they absolutely owned the Packers plan. Like, it felt like they just had Mike Pence number. So my question for you is, you just saw this Packers defense that was so good at the beginning of the season get owned by runs up the middle, 12. If you're Dallas, do you kind of try to do the same thing?
Oh, absolutely. I think that, you know, you look and Dallas is very prideful. They probably think they have just as good as offensive line
as
Philadelphia.
Prideful.
And they say, hey, we can do the same thing. And, you know, I think the big difference and the big thing that Philadelphia has, and you mentioned it with Dallas Goedert had missed, I think, the previous game or two with like a calf injury. And he does such a really good job for their running game. And him and Zach Ertz, they really force you to stay honest because they both can kill you in the passing game, but they're both excellent run blockers. And, you know, Blake Jarwin and Jason Witten, I don't know if they're at that level.
Yeah.
So they're going to be able to have a lot of success in the inside, I believe, but can they run to the edge the way Philadelphia was able to do with Jordan Howard and to a lesser extent Miles Sanders? That's going to be the big question. So, yeah, from the Packers standpoint, I think they'll play a similar they'll try to – beef up and say, hey, set him in the box. We're going to have to stop Zeke. And I think Dallas is going to have to win.
Yeah. And those Packers DBs are good. I mean, Jair Alexander is like one of the already elite cornerbacks in the NFL. Kevin King had a real bounce back name. Blake Jarwin sounds like a fake name. Just going to throw that out
there. It's real.
It's real. But like, is it? So let me ask you about the other side of the ball, because you know LaFleur's scheme pretty well, having covered him in Nashville. What have you thought so far of the marriage between him and Aaron Rodgers?
I guess my worry coming in is that, you know, LaFleur is a little bit of a lot of an X and O guy. And I was always wondering how would he mesh with Aaron Rodgers' really heavy personality. And Aaron Rodgers sort of likes to have that control over the offense. And LaFleur's system is very, like, systematic. Like, it's not like I'm not saying that he can't fluctuate, but it's really
he's got a scheme. Yes. He likes to stick to it.
So
it's the Shanahan.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think they're both trying to gel and they're trying to figure it out. I like the fact that they're embracing Davante Adams and they're really force feeding him the ball, because I think he's probably top three receiver in this league.
Top three. Woo!
Yeah.
He looked like it in this last game.
He did. Although I'm a little worried about the turf toe. I don't know if that's going to hold him out.
Right. Yes. Also, it was against Davante Maddox. So.
Yeah.
that
Eagle secondary.
Jalen
Ramsey.
Prayers
I think that, you know, the LaFleur scheme is really dependent on, and I know you hate it, but getting the run game going. And I think that, you know, they want to get at Aaron Jones going on early downs, and they want to kind of do that systematic thing and get the play action rolling. So that's
I don't hate the run game.
Yeah.
I hate it in certain moments. Clearly, they should have run the ball at some point.
Yeah.
Instead of throwing it on the end zone. And that's, you know, about that. I just felt like there was moments on early downs which they should not have.
And they're throwing it away. I think you're right about that. And that's the first thing I thought during the game. Is every time the Packers run the ball, the Eagles defensive coaches are clapping.
Yeah.
They're like, yes.
If the other team wants you to do something, don't do it.
Right.
That's
yeah.
A good.
Yeah.
Good.
So that's one, you know, one criticism of Floor, because he does want to get that. He loves that second and six, second and five idea. So he would prefer to get that on the ground rather than the pass. So maybe that's something that they can kind of come together and say, hey, maybe we can throw a 5 yard, you know, short pass to Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Or Jimmy Graham to kind of get that early gain.
Yeah.
But they were throwing away a lot of plays early.
It's interesting. You talk about LaFleur and like how he's has a rigid scheme and sensibility, and he's got a game plan, because the Packers offense has been so good on the scripted stuff, right? Like, they've come out just guns blazing over the last few games. And there were moments in this game too where it was just clicking on all cylinders. There was like one little fake screen to the wheel route. I was like, yes, that is what I want to see Aaron Rodgers do. But, you know, LaFleur just got real backed up in the red zone. And I thought situationally he made a few errors as well. So when you watch them, you kind of feel like, man, if you can just do this all four quarters and also do a better job in the red zone, this offense could dominate. Because I think the other takeaway I had, Cam, from this game, and we'll kind of end it here, was Aaron Rodgers looked freaking awesome.
He did.
That's the best he's looked in a minute.
Yeah, he looked comfortable.
Comfortable. And also, when he would get out of the pocket, it didn't feel desperate. He was delivering strikes very quickly after keeping his eyes downfield. That's something I don't think we've seen consistently from him in a while.
He's reminding us that he's still elite.
Yeah.
You know, people forget, but I think Aaron Rodgers is still one of those five or six elite quarterbacks that, you know, can win a Super Bowl every year.
Cowboys defense is good.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
They were good in the loss. They were a lot better than the offense. Granted, you know, Teddy, who we love. But the linebackers looked incredible. They did a nice job with Alvin Kamara. The pass rush. Robert Quinn. What?
Robert Quinn.
What?
Former Dolphin Robin.
What?
Robert Quinn.
Dolphins legend. Robert
yes.
Quinn. 45 years old.
Yeah.
Every time I find out he's younger than me, I'm so upset.
Yeah, he's got a really good bend. That's one thing that everybody yeah. always talks about, Robert Quinn. He gets lower than just about anybody other than Von Miller. And he can get around that edge, and he makes that little speed swipe. And almost every time he's making a really good pass rush, he's right there and defender's back. It's whether he gets him down or not. So there was a lot of times against the Saints where, although they played really good up front, Robert Quinn was trying his best to wreck that game by himself. I don't know if the Dallas has any other edge rushers that can help him out, and that's another question I have about them. But Robert Quinn was a really good pickup for them, and he's already contributing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Lawrence has, who obviously they paid a ton of money to,
absolutely.
He's been good, but I don't think he's been maybe as great as they would have hoped necessarily. I know they like Dorrance Armstrong. There's some other guys there, but yeah, I know. It's a good game. By the way, Robert Quinn's 29. Continues to be upsetting to me. You're younger than him by a lot. Right?
I am.
It's so don't.
Years.
No one wants to know. All right. Before we move on, who do you got?
I'm taking the Packers. I like the Packers this year, and I think it'll be a really close one. I'm thinking, you know, 24-23 Packers. Aaron Rodgers leads a game-winning touchdown drive.
Yeah, I like the Packers. I think that for all the reasons we discussed, the Eagles' offense was uniquely equipped to take on what Pettine was doing. And I also – he's a smart coach. I think he's going to make some adjustments. Speaking of smart coaches, I back into a segue, and then I realize I don't know how to land the plane. Because the next thing we're talking about is Jags-Panthers, and I don't know if that's the right segue there. Because – well, speaking of –
sorry, we'll take some turbo.
Unlikely contenders. this is a game that I really want to watch. I think it's going to be fun because these are teams that are still very much in the thick of things.
Yeah.
That's a phrase I probably overuse. And I want to start with the Jaguars. You just did a piece on Gardner Minshew.
Yes, unheralded ballers. And he has been the epitome of unheralded ballers. It's quarterly article I do. Saying guys we had no idea who they were, who have shown up. And he's on that list. One guy I used to cover in Denver, Shaq Barrett, who has had a phenomenal
DPOY conversation.
Yes, 9 sacks. He has 3 sacks more than anybody else. Exactly. And Kyle Allen, the guy on the other side of the ball, is also on that list. So, he didn't play as well last week.
He's a fumble-rooski.
He is a fumble rookie.
He was a fumble rookie in college, too.
But he looked like Houdini trying to dodge, you know, J.J. Watt and throwing passes.
That's true. That's a tough matchup.
It is. And I thought the Panthers were going to be dead when Cam Newton got
Did
got
you?
Done. I did.
I love that defense.
I love Christian McCaffrey.
Okay, let's start there.
Uh-huh.
Christian McCaffrey, because this is something that jumped out at me, and I'm mixed about it.
Mm-hmm.
Touched the ball 37 times.
Yes.
27 carries, 10 receptions. If he keeps up, he's on pace to carry the ball more than 340 times this season. I don't like that.
Yeah. I don't like that for Christian.
Yes.
For his second contract.
That's what I meant.
Yes.
Sorry. I mean, we know what the Panthers are doing. Although, I don't know, from a load management perspective, now that they're in the thick of things, that's like pretty risky.
It is. It's odd because a lot of the scouting report against Christian McCaffrey that everybody was like afraid to jump on him is that can he carry the load?
Clearly.
He was in Stanford and they were like, he's a little bit undersized. And
when
he gets an NFL offense, is he really going to be a feature back? And now we're talking about, does he have too many touches? So I think it's a testament to Christian McCaffrey that he's been able to do all of this stuff. At some point, he's going to hit a rock. And I hope that he gets paid before he starts to slow down. So if you're listening, please take care of your body. Please figure out a way, if you're in blowout games, to get the coaching staff out, get you out of there. Because 37 touches in a game is not,
they're not going to be in, unless, I don't know if they have the Dolphins on their schedule, but
they
like,
don't, they don't, unfortunately.
Yeah. That there's no break. There's no rest for the weary. Like, why not just let Curtis Samuel tote it a couple times, you know, or Jordan Scarlett? I don't know.
Yeah.
I,
they're so obsessed on McCaffrey running the offense. And I think he's clearly their best player, so I understand why, but yeah, there's not a huge drop off if somebody else carries it for 3 to 5 games.
Well, so they're playing Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
Still a very good defense.
Yes.
In this last win with Minshew, who we'll obviously get to in a second, you definitely notice the absence of Jalen Ramsey. He was spelled by Trey Herndon. Not going to pretend like I knew who Trey Herndon was before this game. Who, honestly, when I went back and watched all the touchdown drives, he gave up a big play on, I think, every score. it's not easy.
They were
picking on him. And which, right, obviously, like, we got, you know, some of those other players in the secondary. That's who you're going to target. I thought DJ Hayden played really well, too, which was, he's had a bit of a bounce back season. But
University of Houston, DJ Hayden.
Is he?
Yeah.
Did you go to University of Houston?
I did go to University of Houston. Go all Cougs. Right. Although it's a rough year, we don't really want to talk about them as much.
Yeah, it's been a little bit rocky.
Yeah.
Did Joel Anderson go to the University of Houston?
He did not.
Oh, but
he
he's from Houston.
He went to TCU.
Oh, yeah, right.
That's my guy, though.
Got
he's
it.
From Houston.
If I, yes. As though I haven't heard the story about LT.
Thomas,
listen,
yes.
Joel has like 3 stories. 2 of them are about winning track championships as a child.
And the other's about backing up LaDainian Thomas.
Yeah, we've all heard that one. Somehow, I think he scooched his way into like the ESPN College Football 150 telling that story. And I started laughing so hard when I saw it. But, tangent, sorry.
Yeah.
But the defense is still very good. But, you know, if there is a weakness, it's probably that Herndon, because I don't believe Jalen's gonna play.
Oh,
so
man. First, this is a plea. Please free Jalen Ramsey. Please free Jalen Ramsey. Like, we got 2 options here. Tom Coughlin, you either gotta get on your knees and do whatever you can to apologize to Jalen Ramsey.
I'm not sure Tom Coughlin's even capable of getting on his knees at this point.
And the more
from
likely,
skeletal perspective.
Yeah, that is true. It might be tough for him to get up.
Like, who's gonna help him?
All right. Second and most likely option, please free Jalen Ramsey. I know you're hoping for this big bounty. You're going to get a lot, but you know what are they trying to accomplish here?
Well, they think they're contenders. They are. They are contenders,
I guess,
in the
technically,
AFC.
Yeah, everybody's a contender in the AFC South.
Look, first of all, first of all, you should have just paid him.
Yeah,
I don't know why they didn't. I mean, I know why. Mm-hmm. You just mentioned his name, but there's all this talk about like the Shad Khan like wants to keep him. Yeah. I don't understand how that didn't translate. Like the Jaguars, so many of their problems over the last few years have stemmed from their approach to contracts, extending Bortle, giving him a ton of money, letting, you know, some of the defensive stars, letting Allen Robinson, not just defensive stars, walk, not paying Yannick, not paying Jalen. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
When you draft really good players, you should pay them money and try to get them to stay, not Blake Bortles. Now it appears that they perhaps have stumbled into the most unlikely gem in the universe, which is a actual NFL caliber 6th-round draft pick starting quarterback.
Minshew!
What do you think of him?
First of all, love the stash. What is that? Is that 70s or is that 80s?
I think it's 70s.
It's 70s. Yeah. It reminds, I think that's why everybody loves him, because it kind of reminds you of that 70s era.
I think there's a few reasons.
Yeah. But I'm gonna be honest. Like, I do a lot of draft prep. I had no idea he was going to be what he is.
Yeah.
He came from that Washington State Mike Leach offense where they put up a lot of stats, but you're never sure whether they're actually good or if it's, you know, the Big 12 defenses or Pac-12 defenses they face every week. But he has been phenomenal. I don't know if Nick Foles could have been better than how he's been in his first 3 starts, and they paid Nick Foles a lot of money.
I don't know what they're going to do about that, man. That's
a whole different topic.
Whole ball of wax.
He's going to be coming back in, what, probably 4 or 5 weeks?
If he keeps playing like this, you can't
bench him.
You can't
especially
bench
him. if they're like in the division race, if they have a winning record, if the team starts rallying around him like they seem to have been. That's going to be tough, man.
The tricky thing is if he's just kind of mediocre, because then it's like, oh, I don't know exactly. I mean, and because of Foles' contract, it's a very unusual situation. Like, they have to do something for him. Maybe they can try to trade him next year or whatever, but it's very tricky. I was at the Jags Texans game, and Minshew was like bad until the last quarter. That was his first start. So I was kind of like not a real Minshew believer after that game. But since then, I think what I like about him, other than, you know, he's been accurate and very poised, is that he's gotten better every game. He's also been really good in a clean pocket, which is, I think, when you're looking at quarterback play, what you want to look at is how do they perform in a clean pocket, because that's consistent game to game. So this Panthers defense is a stiff test.
Yes.
I love the front seven. That's why I was a believer in them. But this is by the way, in that last game, that Panthers game, which they basically won it for Kyle, Kawan Short didn't even play.
Right. And these now I think he just got placed on IR.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So that's going to hurt their defense a bit. They're still very good on a lot of different spots, but losing Short is going to definitely hurt.
Brian Burns versus Josh Allen, by the way, two defensive rookies. Both have been awesome.
Yes. I saw Josh Allen this preseason, and I'll caveat with they were playing the Dolphins. But I saw Josh Allen in the preseason.
Oh, that was the game where he had like 300 sacks?
Yes.
And I was crazy.
Like, holy cow.
Crazy.
Who is this dude? And then I'm like, was it just the Dolphins or is this guy really good?
He's legit.
He's been really legit. So, yes, he's defensive rookie of the year candidate, I think.
Totally. And
Brian Burns has been playing well.
He should be a defensive rookie of the year candidate too, the way he's been playing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, no.
It's been a good class.
I think I'm really intrigued to see like which one of these quarterbacks can step up. Like you mentioned Kyle Allen in small hands and propensity
for fumbling. Humble Rooski is the word I use.
But I do think that he has also done a really good job of keeping his team on track. And both of these.
He wasn't terrible in this game. Yeah, he just wasn't great.
Both of these quarterbacks, and I think it's kind of the understated part of it because we all love the kind of out of nowhere story.
Mm-hmm.
But both of them have really leaned on their running game.
Yeah.
And, you know, Fournette had 225
yards. Right. So Fournette finally breaks through. And that was the other reason that I was kind of like a little bit up on the Jags offense is the offensive line. They did give up a lot of sacks, but the run blocking was really good in this last game, and it's not been good for Fournette. So a lot of it's on Fournette.
It is,
but they've not been good.
But like to credit to Minshew, he doesn't try to be like a superhero. And I know there's like a legend. He's like the legend of Duval County now. But like, there's very little times in games where I'm like, he's trying to win this by himself. And that's really something that a young quarterback, you don't always have that.
Sometimes, he's not making dumb choices.
He's not. He's not making rookie mistakes as a rookie 6th-round pick. So I'm excited for him. I'm excited to see like how he continues this run. The stash, the legend of Minshew. I saw ESPN did a thing with Uncle Rico
with
them last week.
A lot.
So we're all in on Minshew. I hope he doesn't crash down to the ground really hard. But it's a fun ride. Just like Fitzmagic last year. We're going to ride it until
with Fitzmagic though, we knew what he was like because he had this whole up and down record for years. So the whole time I was like, come on, we know this is
gonna end.
We don't know with Minshew. Yeah. And that's partly why it's so exciting. Equally exciting, Upstart. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy, getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully now there's Upstart.com. The revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high-interest credit card debt. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you, and they understand that. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in just a few minutes. The best part? Once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. The next day. Over 300,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment from Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot. And hurry to upstart.com/Mina to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes and it won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/Mina.
Question. Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
As always, if you leave a review that has 5 stars on my iTunes, has to have 5 stars, with a question in the review, I will answer it. First question. Map892 wants to know if I have any football books I'd recommend. So one that comes to mind for me, Take Your Eye Off the Ball by Pat Kerwin. That's a good one. You know, my friend Doug Farrar just wrote a book.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. Do you have any recommendations?
No Cheering in the Press Box is a good one. It's a classic. Mm-hmm. I'll plug this because he's one of my favorite coaches in the league. Wade Phillips wrote a book called Son of Bum about his relationship with his dad and just sort of that that Phillips family tree. That was a good read. I think those are the two that comes to mind.
Another really good one is not really like to learn about football so much, but to just learn about a team. Collision Low Crossers by Nicholas Dewidoff. I just ran Drell Rivas a few years ago, and I read it for that purpose. It's awesome. Pick 611. Oh, I don't want to do this. He wants me to explain why the Seahawks were right or to throw the ball instead of. All right, I'm going to do it really. I need to make like one of those like meme sheets that explains things. So every time, so
you
I don't have to like.
To it, like
yeah, I'm like, here are the many reasons. I mean, it was a number of things. The look the defense was giving them. The fact that Marshawn Lynch actually was not that great in that situation. And then most importantly, the down and time left. Because if they had run the ball instead of throwing it against the defense that was prepared for that, they would have had to throw it in the final two downs because of the time left. So by throwing it, they preserved optionality. And yeah, okay.
Hi, Michael Butler.
Hi, Lenny. Chargers are garbage is the user handle name. Says, I'm not getting the Chiefs defense enough credit for their pass defense last year. I mean, a lot of the success of the pass defense was because teams had to pass on them, but that's neither here nor there. He or she wants to know, how I feel about doing the extra point like they do in rugby. So I don't watch rugby, but they explain it. Apparently, you kick in relation to where the touchdown was actually scored. So if you score from the 2-yard line, it's a, you know, but if you score from far away, you have to kick. Or should we just do a 2-point conversion?
Right. So why are we punishing teams for having big plays?
Because if you throw
a 70-yard touchdown on the first play, then I'm not going to kick from
that. Do you want to get rid of the extra point?
I actually like it how it is now.
I'm fine with it too.
I'm fine with it now because like
so angry about it. It's kind of funny and suspenseful.
Yeah, and it makes the kicker position important. Like, sorry Bears fans, but it's kind of funny to me like that, you know, when you have a situation where you can't find a kicker and you lose games by a kicker. Mm-hmm. Like that stuff is part of roster building. You got to find a good kicker.
So as you're giving your familiarity with the Dolphins, I think you're and the Titans qualifying into this one. Randonius Maximus asks, why do teams overpay game manager quarterbacks like Ryan Tannehill and Andy Dalton?
Oh, fear of being terrible. I think that's the biggest thing, and that's sort of the opposite side. We'll talk about the Dolphins in a little bit. That's sort of the opposite side of why teams don't go full tank, because they don't want to. They want to be relevant, and they want to at least be in the conversation. Adam Gase is the king of, you know, being in contention. In December, and if you have a quarterback like Ryan Tannehill, if you have a quarterback like Andy Dalton, you give you a chance to be in contention. So I think especially for teams that are stuck in that mediocrity spell, they're picking like 15th, 16th every year, so there's never like a franchise changing quarterback there for them. So they'd rather just stay status quo than risk being the laughing stock of the league.
Did you, before we get to the last question, did you think Tannehill would have taken Mariota's job by now?
No, I didn't. But I do think that Tannehill starts a game before the year's
over. I mean, Mariota. Of course, in the last game, they were like, awesome. I mean, I
really love Marcus. I will say that.
Everybody likes him.
He's a very likable guy, but got to show me something. It's a show me league. And I haven't seen him.
He does 1 week.
He does.
And then he won't the next week. I want to actually have a question about the.
We'll put a pin in that.
How long did you cover the Titans, by the way?
Just a year.
Just a year, okay. BBIICCS. Asks, if there's a movie made about me, which actress and actor would play me and Lenny? Great question. I've thought about this a lot. I would be played by Keanu Reeves, and Lenny would be played by the dog from Frasier.
Interesting.
What would you choose for yourself?
For me? Will Smith.
Who doesn't love Will Smith?
Will Smith.
He's like really old, though.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of odd.
Anyway, I think he can shave his beard off and play it off well.
Do you follow his Instagram?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we can do Michael Jordan if we do that. But I think that, you know, I don't know. I feel like that may be...
Giving yourself Michael B. Jordan, huh? Okay, all right. I see you.
But I like the comedy factor.
That'd be like me, like, I feel like Adriana Lima would do a job by me. Okay, let's talk about the Dolphins. Let's do this. Before we get into the whole tank thing, and I want to talk to you about that, let's just go off this last game. So they lost. It was their best loss of the season.
Yes.
Just a 20,
most competitive loss.
A mere 20-point loss. But they went into halftime tied, right?
But down 7.
Basically tied.
They should have been tied.
They should have been tied because how many people? Devontae Parker dropped one. I think Ballage. Is it Ballage or Ballage?
Ballage. Yeah, Kalen Ballage.
Ballage.
Yeah.
That's more appropriate because he doesn't really. He doesn't deserve Ballage as a Ballage fantasy owner. But in any case, Rosen was awesome in the first half.
Yeah, I think that was the best half of football Josh
ever
has played in his NFL career.
I agree.
He had I think his passer rating, I can't quote it from now, but it was the highest that he's had in his career. And you know, I think
126.8.
Yeah, 126.8. He looked great. He came out and like I talked to him before the game, and I asked him like, what is his three things that he comes into every game? And he talked about reaching an aggression goal, and that was the main thing. And that's the thing for this Dolphins team is. Early in the season, they were so afraid to make mistakes. So they were going three and out, three and out, three and out. And he came out in that first drive, and he hits Devontae Parker with a deep ball. You know, he's throwing one. He got lucky a little bit, but he's throwing a deep ball to Mike Gesicki, and it bounces into Preston Williams.
Oh, that was funny. Yeah.
When
I saw that, I was like, maybe God wants him to win today.
Right. And then they got their first lead of the game, and everybody was like, whoa. And it lasted 4 minutes.
Wait, was this in Miami?
This was in Miami, yes.
Were people wilding?
You know, relatively for the crowd size.
Yes. What are the crowd sizes like?
It's not great. Not
is there still like a passionate feeling?
There is very
Are people kind of having fun with it?
The Dolphins fan base is really interesting, and we can talk about
a little
bit of depth. It's a split between the Tank Crew. I'll just call them the Tank Crew, who are all in.
They're all
the
in
tank.
On the tank. Right.
A surprisingly large amount of fans who are like 0-16.
Let's do it.
Yeah. I'm all in. I'm riding the tank with you. And then there's fans that come every Sunday, season ticket holders, who hold out hope. And they're cheering when the Dolphins are scoring, and they want to win. And it's a weird split to me because, you know, I think the people who go to the games are like, yes, we still want to support them, or we don't want to get embarrassed. I talked to a fan yesterday who was like, man, I knew it was going to be bad, and I bought season tickets because I didn't think it was going to be this bad.
They don't like being the laughing.
They don't
want to
be the laughing stock.
The NFL.
Yeah, they're like, hey, I want to see progress. I want to see us win a few games, but not too many. So it's a weird mix.
Yeah, I think a lot about like Philadelphia and the process, and like how what you're describing also happened there, where some fans really embraced the process and they were kind of educated on it. Like they were like, oh, this is good. You can be, and like look at the six. Like you know, like they were rewarded. Obviously, basketball and football very different. Rosen, so. The other question I wanted to ask you, I want to talk about him a little bit because I think it cuts to what you're describing, which is this debate over what do we want to tank? What do we want out of the season? Because when they got him for very little, it was like this very high upside thing. I think people were divided over like, okay, well, what do we need to see out of him? What do we want out of him? Because, you know, Brian Flores and Chris Greer, part of me thinks they probably love the idea of getting Tua next year or picking their quarterback or whatever. Like, do they want Josh Rosen to win this job? And question B, do you think he has it in him at all based on what you've seen from a football perspective?
Yeah. First things first, and I thought about it a lot as far as, like, whether we should feel bad for Josh Rosen or if it's just sort of the way the league is. But I think there's very slim to no chance that Josh Rosen stops the Dolphins from drafting a quarterback number one overall next year. And I think the Dolphins have made up their mind that they're all in on a quarterback in 2020. So barring Josh Rosen turning into the second coming of Dan Marino over the last 12 games, I think that his chance is relatively no chance. So, I you know, you could argue on whether, like, there's a very strong argument that Josh Rosen's been dealt maybe the worst hand of any quarterback in the first 2 years.
I think people kind of get that now, too. That's like the common narrative.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's also the chance that, you know, the thought that, hey, it's football. And, you know, sometimes we don't get, you know, the great chance. So he does have 12 games. I think the thing for him is he's going to have a chance to audition for everybody else. So I would think that if he plays well enough, the Dolphins probably would still draft a quarterback, but they could trade him to a team that might believe that he could be the answer, and maybe the third time's a charm.
Heck, if I'm Chicago, I'll take a flyer on Josh Rosen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always, and we can wait a little bit to go further in Josh Rosen if you want to talk about him later, but I always say that Josh Rosen, people ask me about Josh Rosen, and I say that he has the arm talent, in my opinion, to be a starting quarterback.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the intangibles yet to be a starting quarterback.
Interesting. So, yeah, I want to talk about that because I liked him coming out of college. I liked his arm talent. I liked his mechanics. He's a really pretty throwing motion.
Yes.
Not the most mobile guy, obviously. But the intangibles is the thing that continues to haunt him.
Right.
What jumped out to me in this game against the Chargers, Cam, was there, like, those drops.
Right.
I was curious because They were bad.
Yes.
And you could see Josh Rosen efforting so hard to not look pissed.
Yes.
And I was like applauding, like, good yes. for you, dude, because I would have been like hands on the hips, the infamous body language we heard about
yes.
from Brian Flores. So let me ask you this. Do you like the guy?
I do. I do. I know people think that he's an a-hole or he's, you know, someone who kind of has this aloof, like, kind of personality, where not aloof, but he sort of has this pretentious personality. And I could see how you may say that, but I like the fact that he's truly to himself. He is who he is.
Yeah.
Like, and he's going to be honest. He's not going to, like, pretend. And I think that's, people want him to be a little bit more, like, PC quarterbackish and do things
just
that.
Just like the usual.
Yeah, the kind of bland and,
yeah.
you know, teammates don't say when you feel like.
He cares about the environment. How dare he?
He does. And
remember
they joke
that?
About it. They joke about it in a locker room.
His teammates like him?
I think so.
Actually probably much more important.
Yeah,
than
yeah. Like,
like,
like, I'm not gonna say he's the most likable guy in the room, but
he's
not
charismatic.
No, but like they aren't shunning him.
Yeah.
Like I see Ryan Fitzpatrick and him joking around all the time, and this is a guy who's competing for his job.
Yeah.
So like I think that's a little overblown. Like the fact that isn't a good teammate.
The nerd quarterbacks. Do they choose the numbers 3 and 14 to make pie? Answer the question.
I don't know, but that's not a bad idea.
Have you asked?
I have not asked.
Well, there you go.
I did ask.
Doing your job.
That's my next question when I get in the locker room on
they might
on
like
Wednesday.
That question.
Yeah. I did ask Ryan Fitzpatrick about how he got to Harvard, and he gave me a really good story behind it. And
what
he
is
said
the story?
He said that he wanted to I believe it was one Pac-12 school.
Wait. Ryan Fitzpatrick went to Harvard?
He did go to Harvard.
Wow.
You didn't know that?
No, I'm just kidding.
I missed the sarcasm there.
Yeah, sorry. I was just being a jerk. How did he end up there?
But yeah, he was trying to go to this Pac-12 school. I believe it was Stanford, but don't quote me on that. Mm-hmm. And he was trying his best to get in, and they just weren't paying attention to him. And he only got one. He was like, okay, if I can't get to Stanford, I'm going to go to the best academic school I could do.
Mm.
And he was very disappointed. Like, he didn't really want to do it. And then he got to Harvard, and he balled out, and he got to the NFL. And he talks to his kids, and he was like, that was a lesson for me, because he had no desire for academics other than the fact that he was really smart. He wanted to play football.
He was not. Yeah. He didn't go to play school.
Right. And he was like, famous. But now that was the best decision I ever made, because I have a Harvard education.
Good for Ryan Fitzpatrick. Yeah. Okay, so back to Rosen. So,
yes.
Yeah, so, like, I think you're right. The best case, this is an addition to play somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know, I think, like, optimally for Dolphins fans, what would be nice is to still lose,
yeah.
but have competitive games. Kind of like what you saw
right.
with the Browns. And to see something from some of the younger
improvement.
Players.
Improvement.
So let me ask you that as the next question. Like, are you seeing any flashes of goodness on this team?
Not really, to be frank. Like, I think they're, like, if you look at individual performances, like, Josh Rosen has improved. I will say this. Josh Rosen has improved dramatically over what we
really?
Saw in training camp. It's definitely over the spring. Like, there was times in the spring where we would watch him and we'd be like, I'm not sure if he's the second best quarterback on this
really?
Roster.
Who's their other quarterback?
Jake Rudock.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, it was rough. I'm not understating that at all. Like,
yeah.
it was rough during camp sometimes, and Ryan Fitzpatrick clearly looked like the best quarterback on the field. And as time went on, as Josh Rosen got mm-hmm. more comfort in the offense, he started making that gap smaller and smaller. And then it became clear that, you know, Josh Rosen's clearly the most talented quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, when can he catch up on the knowledge of the offense and, you know, timing and anticipation, a couple of his other kind of, you know, mistakes that he makes, you know? So, I think that Josh Rosen's made a lot of improvement, even though, you know, he may not be far enough for mm-hmm. them to pick him.
Right.
You know, one guy who, I think is a cornerstone piece for them going forward, Xavien Howard. They paid. He's a top paid cornerback in the NFL. I was really intrigued to see how he handled this, because it's tough for him. And I had a conversation with him about the tank, and we can talk about the tank a little bit.
Well, I think
further.
He's a great person to talk about through the lens of the tank.
Yes.
Because he's actually good.
He's very good. He's very good. And, you know, he didn't know it was going to be this bad.
Yeah.
He knew it was going to be bad.
Does he feel betrayed or what?
He didn't say he felt betrayed, but he said he felt like he wonders a lot about, will they be good while I'm in my prime?
Yeah, fair.
And he wonder,
fair question.
And he's like, I want to win while I'm in my prime.
Yeah.
And like, it's intriguing, because I talked to him around the same time when Mick Fitzpatrick was requesting a trade, and he was like, yeah, that's not a road that I've really thought about going down. But he was like, man, I applaud these guys who do, because, you know, it takes a lot of nuts to do that.
Yeah.
And
Balazs.
Balazs. That was good. But yeah, no, I think for him, like, I'll just say this, when they played the Cowboys, I thought that was his worst game as a pro. And there was times in the game where I could see he was a little discouraged and it didn't seem like he was that same energy that he made play in games. And I wonder, like, how much is that because his team
is so
kind of inevitable to lose. And you wonder if that kind of creates a culture and creates, like, you know, bad patterns for guys who are supposed to be your core players.
That's a great question. Because I think with the tank, there's so many issues and debatable aspects of it. One of which is, how do you manage it? Because like the Sixers, you are holding, some guys will still be there.
Right.
Many won't.
Yes. Most of those
most
guys.
Most will not. I mean, let's talk about the tank. So, my friend Dominic Foxworth has been going off about how he thinks it's unethical and stuff. And I think it's complicated because, and when I say going off, Dominic's made very, like, smart, interesting points.
I didn't mean going off.
But he's put out a lot of content to that effect. And we have talked about it as well. So on one hand, I look at this Dolphins team and I say half these guys wouldn't even play starting in the NFL.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
How can we say they're being betrayed or what? Like, you know what I mean? And they know that, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
they know
absolutely.
They're getting a shot they wouldn't otherwise get.
Yes.
But then you've got guys like Xavien. There's not many on this team.
There's not. There's a very small handful. No, I think that's an excellent point you made. Like, and I actually did a piece about this, but it's kind of like the psychology of the tank, you know, because there's everybody thinks that, hey, everybody has the same mindset in the locker room about losing. And I think one of the biggest misnomers in the NFL is that players all play to win championships. I don't believe that's the case. There's a lot of players who play to get get an opportunity, who would value an opportunity over winning, that would value money over winning.
Yeah.
And I think all of those they're well in their right to do it. So the fact that the team isn't winning is not the end all be all.
For everyone. Yeah.
So there are players, like I talked to a guy, Vince Beagle, who was traded from the Saints to the Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
A week before the season. So he went from a team that probably was a championship contender to the worst team in the league. But he was pumped.
Really?
He was excited. He said, I was pumped when I saw I was going to the Dolphins.
Because he gets to play
because more. He said, I was a special teams contender, teams contributor on one of the most veteran teams on the league. And now I go on the youngest team and I can actually, you know, play defense and have an opportunity to produce. And that kind of opened my mind. I'm like, hey, you know, guys actually can take advantage of this. Because there's
putting tape out there.
There's probably like 10 or 12 guys on this roster who might not be on an NFL roster if it wasn't for the Dolphins.
I think there's like, you can argue, well, some of these guys are putting tape out there that they would never have get the chance to, and whether they're on this team or another team, that's an opportunity. You can also argue, well, it's bad tape, and football is an interactive sport. It's, you know, these players depend on other players to play well. And so I think certain positions are affected by that more than others, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you're a wide receiver, yes, you need the quarterback to get you the ball, but for the most part, you're in space, you can do things, but if you're a running back playing behind a horrible offensive line, you're not going to make hay. So I think it really affects every player in a different way.
It does. And that's why, like, I don't want to go a little too far, but like the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade that happened earlier this offseason, everybody had their opinion on Minkah requesting a trade. And what I kind of saw from Minkah was he felt like he was being put in a situation to cover the team's holes. So he felt like
good example of a player who did not benefit at all.
Right.
This.
So his big scouting report come out of the draft is this guy's versatile. He can be a Swiss Army knife. He can do whatever he can. And that is true. But your versatility can be overused to the point where you're not being able to maximize it. When you're playing six or seven positions, like we talked to him after one joint practice in Tampa, and he was like, I'm 195 pounds. I shouldn't be playing in the box. And the team continued to play him in the box.
Right.
So, like, you know, they felt like that's the best thing for the team. And they've said time and time again, we're going to do what's best for the team, which I think all teams do. But if you feel like the tank and the way the team's building is not allowing you to grow.
Yes, or to play well.
Play well. Because he played his worst game in the pro.
Yes, I remember.
Against
yes.
Baltimore. He was looking like.
He played like five positions in that game.
Yeah,
too.
We were like, whoa, what is this? Like, what happened to this guy?
Yeah.
And now he's in Pittsburgh, and I saw him playing a lot of free safety, which he enjoys.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to play some slot corner, which he also enjoys. And I think that's the best way to use him. So for a guy like that, I think the tank was terrible because he never got to realize. And he was a guy who they thought was going to be a pillar of this team. Like he was one of their three or four building pieces that you said, Minka's going to be around when we're good.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work out for him because of that.
Same with Tunsil, obviously.
Yeah,
and by the way, with Tunsil, like, the return was so outrageous.
Yeah. Tunsil was different. Minka was a guy who decided that, for me, he made a personal decision, which I don't blame him on. People have their different opinions,
sure,
say he was being soft or whatever. I think that he realized that if I'm going to be a really good player in this league, I have to take ownership and say I need to be in a better situation. So he did that, and the Dolphins felt like they had to obligate him because of, you know, circumstance and the fact that they were able to get a first-round pick from Pittsburgh. The Tunsil deal, which I think shocked everyone here, was like the Texans just saying, what can we give you?
Have it all.
What can we
give
you?
Take it all.
Do you want my house too? Do you want my kids? What can we do to get it done? And Chris Greer was finally like, yeah, sure, that's enough.
I felt, like an indecent proposal.
Yeah. So like, I think they got great value for Tunsil and I think they got great value for Minka. I don't know if that's a wise move for them giving up guys who were proven first round picks. And
who would you have kept?
I would have kept Tunsil for sure.
Really?
Yeah. And I know it was a great value. It's weird
because
they got so much, but my thought is.
And they would have had to pay him.
They would have. But it's so hard to find quality, really good left tackles in this league.
Look around.
The Browns have been, quote unquote, tanking or whatever for 3 years, and they still haven't found an offensive tackle. So,
that's a great point.
You know, and the Texans picks are most likely going to be in the 20s. So you're going to have two picks in the 20s. What are the chances that you get a Laravee Tunsil as one of those picks?
So I think that brings us to the final issue or question mark about all of this, which is they've got 3 first round picks.
Yeah.
It's going to be really fun. They should just have the draft in Miami.
They should.
2 first rounders in the 2021 draft. They have 2 second rounders. And I mean, I think technical term is buttload.
Right.
Now, there's Bill Barnwell did a piece a couple years ago. We talked about kind of historically bad teams and they haven't done well. Like the Dolphins being a great example of a team that went 1-15 in 2007. That's right.
Yes.
So, you know, the example of a team that did manage to benefit from the tank was Dallas, but that was the Herschel Walker trade.
Right.
So I guess that's the kind of, and we can kind of land the plane here, that's kind of the ominous storm cloud hanging all over all of this, which is, will it work? Will it have been worth it? And will it work quickly?
Right.
Ish.
I'll say this, like, Chris Greer has a very set plan. Like, he is
he's locked in.
He's
right?
locked
this
in.
Is, he's not, they are, him and Flores are not going to get sacrificed.
Yeah, no, I get this question a lot. I think they're, you know, you can only trust it so much because this is an organization who has, you know, had a reputation of firing coaches a little quick.
Right.
But I think that
non-white coach, that's another issue where traditionally in the NFL have not been given as much of a chance.
Yes, and the Steve Wilkes situation always scares me. That being said, like, talk to people in the organization and kind of get a feel there. I would be shocked if either of those guys are gone after a year. I think they get at least 3 years, in my opinion.
Wow.
To figure this
3 years.
I think so.
Because they were saying that in Cleveland.
I know.
And then,
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm having a caveat saying,
accept,
like,
your caveats.
I can be surprised, but like, I think minimum 2, and I think 3 is really a good parameter, because if you draft the quarterback next year, Tua, which everybody is kind of already placing them in the Dolphin uniform.
You think it's Tua, not Herbert?
I think it's Tua.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Herbert doesn't look great to me.
Yeah.
Well, I'll get to the, I gotta spend more time on.
Yeah. Herbert kind of reminds me of Matt Stafford. Which
that's
is a kind of different thing for a different day. So it depends on how you feel about Matt Stafford. That's kind of how I see it. But yeah, I think they're all in on Tua.
And are Dolphins fans watching a lot of Bama football?
Oh, yes.
Love that.
Yes. They've created shirts, Tanko Viola shirts.
Oh, wow. Do you see them at the games?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, they're all in on Tua. They listen to press conferences to see if Brian Flores talks about Bama or Tua. Like, I've never seen a team all in on the draft
that's
and a
awesome.
Particular player this early.
Well, let me ask you again. So, like, they've got all these picks.
Yes.
So, it's presumably number one,
yes,
Tua.
Yes,
how do you build around him? Like, is he walking into a terrible situation with Tunsil gone? And
yeah, I'm worried about him because, like, you draft Tua and you have a couple first round picks and they have over $100 million in cap space. So they're going to say, hey, we're going to be able to bring some free agents
that's
in.
Wild.
They're going to have to overpay him, but they're going to bring in some free agents and they're going to draft some players. But, like, this thing isn't going to flip. Like, that's my thing with Tua. Like, he's not going to save this organization in a year. Like, it's going to be rough next year. And, you know, that's why I think they need at least 3 years, because they're not going to look like a team that's ready to go in a year. So, they're going to have to draft really well. That's the most important thing. Like, these bounty of picks is great, but, like, Chris Greer has had up and down track record in drafts. Like,
yeah.
He's been able to draft guys like Xavien Howard and Laremy Tunsil and Minkah Fitzpatrick, but he's also drafted guys like Charles Harris and Devontae Parker and Mike Gesicki and some of these guys
No one talks about him.
No, he was a 2017 first round pick. Yeah. Same draft as Taco, who Dallas gave up on.
Sack leader in Miami, yes. Taco Charlton. Put some respect on his name.
He got here last week and he already leads the Dolphins to sacks.
So. How's Wilkins looked, by the way?
Wilkins has looked pretty solid. He hasn't made a lot of splash plays, so people are like, okay, what's he doing? But he had one of his better games last week against the Chargers. So I think he's a guy that you're going to put in that middle for 10 years.
He'll develop. He was kind of like high floor, low ceiling, I feel like. Yeah. I didn't love the pick, but
high floor, high carrot, safe.
Safe pick. Yes. Yeah. I think as a Dolphin, he would make more splash plays. okay, cool. Well, I want to like come back to you about this at some point, because I just think it's endlessly interesting.
It is.
They are fully going for it.
They are.
And I've got some questions for you.
Okay.
But first, I want to remind my listeners to check out another ESPN podcast, The Right Time with Bomani Jones. This week, Bo discusses OBJ getting choked out by Marlon Humphrey, allegedly, and tries to guess whether or not 10 players are still in the NBA. Plus, he chats with Bulls forward Wendell Carter about how Coach K compares to other NBA coaches. Pablo Torre and I stumbled on Wendell Carter's draft party in New York the year that he was drafted, because we were walking by a bar and we were like,
really?
Wendell Carter? It was like near the seaport. Download and subscribe to The Right Time right now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
So we didn't talk about this game, the Mina Bowl.
Yes.
I felt like I kind of just wanted to let it sit, but I'm going to ask you.
You can't run from it.
Who you got? You got Cam Wolf.
The Mina Bowl. You know, unlike Mina, I'm going to stay loyal to the Seattle faithful. And I think Seattle gets a win here against the Rams.
You do.
I think that
it's a pick 'em right now.
It is a pick 'em right now. I think the Rams, you know, it was a little eye-opening to see the way the Bucks were able to, you know, score 55 points against them. And, you know, the way that defense still has a lot of holes in there. And I think that this Seattle team is going to use this motivation game.
You know, the
Rams have sort of run away with this division
the
last
division
couple years.
Take division back.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be a lot of onus on them and a lot of pressure on them. So I'm not, like, saying the Rams, it's time to worry about the Rams, but I do think Seattle takes this game. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's a little impressive. Like, you know,
impressive.
Maybe a double-digit win.
No, it's not going to be a double-digit win. I'm not going to get into it. I'm very curious to see if the Seahawks defense plays the Rams the way every defense in the NFL has been, which is using the – everyone calls it the Belichick blueprint, but it was really the Matt Patricia blueprint. But whatever, the, you know, six guys at the line of scrimmage. Yeah. I'm curious to see if Seattle does that, because Seattle's been very rigid about sticking to their base personnel, sometimes to a fault. So we'll see. I'm curious. I'm just going to leave it at that. I'm not getting
into
it.
So who are you rooting for, Rams / Seahawks?
Oh, stop. Of course I'm rooting for Seattle. Question two. You used to cover the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
What are the Titans? Explain it, please.
Oh,
are they? What are they? I don't understand. Every week it's like a different team. I just don't get it.
They're a ball of confusion.
They're so confusing.
It's crazy. They have changed coaches. I guess three times over the last 5 years. And they are the same exact team every year,
how?
It seems like. And they're very different coaches. Like, Vrabel's a very different coach than Mike Mularkey.
Yeah.
But they are a team that, like, they can beat any team in the league. I sat and watched them in person as they went to Kansas City. And Marcus Mariota came back from a 20-point deficit for them to win their first playoff game in, like, two decades.
Sometimes he's sick.
And I've also seen them, like, lose, like, 6-3 ball games to, like, the Browns. So the bad Browns.
Is it probably flows from Mariota being so high variance?
It is. And like, I think this team, this offense particularly, is so like wishy-washy from week to week.
Yeah.
Some weeks you'll see good Derrick Henry where he runs for 200 yards and you're like, why don't they do this every week? And then sometimes he's kind of pitter-pattering in the backfield and he's gaining 2 yards a carry. And that, I think the offense rolls directly on Derrick Henry. If you get Derrick Henry going and teams have to, like, worry about that bulldozer of a running back kind of running people over, then you get single coverage on Corey Davis down the field and Mariota can see him. Then the play action opens up and Marcus is absolutely great in the play action. So once those elements start going, I think this team becomes a lot better offensively. I think they're one of the most underrated defensive teams in the league. I think, you know,
but Kevin, then sometimes they suck.
I think Kevin Byard is in my opinion, the best safety in the league. I think he's the best safety in the league.
He's good. And, he's good.
And I think there's a lot of guys on that defensive unit who really help them out. But yeah, like you said, like some weeks you're like, why is Adoree Jackson getting beat on an 80-yard touchdown?
I know.
You know?
Betting on the Titans is the dumbest thing you can do, in my opinion.
They're confusion. They're 8-8 team. That's what
eternally 8-8. And I want them to be good because I really like that fan base.
Yeah.
I think they're fun.
Very passionate. Like, smaller. But they love football.
They do. Question number three. Do you think the Dolphins logo was better when it was a cute smiley dolphin? The correct answer is yes.
I do appreciate the old school Dolphins logo.
So cute.
I appreciate a lot of old school Dolphin stuff. Like, I think they should bring
back Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Yes. Throwback jerseys. Bring them back.
Colors are dope.
They are. Yeah, they are. There's a lot of really dope history elements of the Dolphins. That they should really bring back, including how good the team
including
was.
Winning. Including winning. Including winning. Question four. So you've been living in Miami now for about a year.
Yeah, a little over a year. Yep.
Crazy. What's the craziest thing you've ever seen on South Beach?
Oh, man.
Or the funniest thing. Did you know Nick Cannon has a bar now? Nick Cannon Wild and Out? I just walked by it.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, I do know that. I have seen that.
I think it's new.
Yes.
Or maybe I just didn't notice it.
Yes. It's been there for a little bit. It's been there for at least a year.
Okay.
Since I've been out here. The wildest thing I've seen on South Beach. Okay, so spring break is crazy out here.
Yeah.
So I try to avoid South Beach as much as I can on spring break.
Yeah.
But I came down here 1 year because my parents were in town and they wanted to go to hit South Beach and they came during spring break.
Jesus.
So I walked in and I saw two girls fighting.
I was like, where is this going? Where is this going, Yam?
One girl. No, we're not going to go there.
Okay, two girls fighting.
One girl's, like, I guess her weave is halfway falling off.
Okay.
Other girl, her bra is starting to come up. So it's like a whole, like, everything is coming away in this fight. And there's, like, a huge circle of people around them. Like, it's a UFC brawl.
Yeah.
And
World Star.
I was just like, wow. And you just see people walking by.
Just like nothing's going
on. There's nothing going on. And then you have just a crowd there just all surrounding them. So I felt like that was the epitome of South Beach.
It's where like you just
see chaos going and everybody
just keeps minding their own business.
Yeah.
Question five, as always, is from my dog, Lenny. Mm-hmm. I don't write his questions.
Yeah.
You got to just take it.
I'll take it.
Lenny says he knows you have a podcast called Howling with the Wolf.
That's very intuitive, Lenny.
He wants to know. He's on the internet, please.
Yeah.
Lenny wants to know if you feel bad for appropriating his culture.
I did worry about it in the beginning and tried to figure out exactly how I could approach the dogs with with the offer to allow them to use it, and I got no response. So Lenny, that you know, whoever. I tried to go to the boss of the dogs.
The dog? Can he come on?
He just was not responding. I don't know if I did something to him, but I took it upon myself. I gave it a couple weeks and I didn't get a response from the boss of the dogs. So I felt like I was within liberty.
There you go.
To go ahead and say, we're howling.